Welcome to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, the show that tells you the truth about marijuana, reveals the politics behind its prohibition, gives you the facts and information about its legendary medical and health benefits, and tries to clear up all that legal mumbo-jumbo that makes it so difficult, so dangerous, and nearly impossible for you to avail yourself of this ancient medicinal herb. Well, welcome to our newest show. Hey, you know, I've been kind of off the internet for a little while with the show, but we are coming roaring back with a wonderful show. My name is Lanny Swerdlow. I'm a registered nurse, legal nurse consultant, and a marijuana activist, and I welcome you to our show, Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. This is your first time listening in? Well, thank you for joining us, and if you are joining us and wondering what's ever happened to us, we're still alive, we're still doing well. And listen, you know, we've got a great show for you tonight. You know, prior to the passage of Prop 64, many cities had banned all medical marijuana patient cultivation. They were allowed to do that, indoor as well as outdoor. They were allowed to do that in the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Control Act. But when Proposition 64 passed, although the Proposition 64 continues to allow cities and counties and so on to ban outdoor cultivation, they could no longer ban indoor cultivation. Well, all those cities that had banned indoor cultivation were, oh my gosh, they just were beside themselves. And so although Proposition 64 does allow cities to enact reasonable regulations on indoor cultivation, many cities have enacted onerous regulations that are anything but reasonable and amount to a de facto ban. The city of Upland was one of them. And our guest tonight on our show is Mike Harris, who is a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the city of Upland for their onerous regulations. When we bring Mike on the air, he'll talk about just how onerous these regulations are and what is being done to try to upend them. Upland is not the only city to do this. Many other cities have done the same thing, but the lawsuit that Mike is going to be talking about is the first one that is going to court saying, hey, these regulations are not reasonable. Okay, but before we get to that, as usual, I'm going to do my little editorializing, and this one's a little different because, you know, I could not think of a better place to make an announcement of my run for public office than on a podcast of Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. So here it is. I am running for a position on the board of directors of the San Gorgonio Memorial Healthcare District, which oversees the operation of the San Gorgonio Memorial Hospital in Banning. I am doing so at the urging of a significant number of local community residents, past Democratic Club members, and quite a few folks who have been urging me to run for some kind of public office for years. Now, formed in 1947, the San Gorgonio Memorial Healthcare District serves approximately 95,000 residents in the cities of Banning and Beaumont and a portion of the city of Calle Mesa and the neighboring unincorporated areas of Cabazon, Cherry Valley, and Whitewater, where I live with my spouse, Victor Michelle. Now, located in Banning, the district owns the San Gorgonio Memorial Hospital's land, building, and equipment and leases these assets to the hospital's nonprofit corporation to provide health care services on the district's behalf. The San Gorgonio Memorial Healthcare District consists of five publicly elected directors who, along with eight appointed directors of the hospital's board, oversees the operation of the hospital. And I am running for one of the seats on the five-member publicly elected district. Now, the hospital is undergoing major problems. In 2017, there was a campaign. Now, this is a small, you know, community we're talking about here. Get this. In 2017, there was a campaign undertaken by 75 doctors affiliated with the Beaver Medical Group calling for a change in leadership, claiming a toxic working environment, intimidation of doctors, and a host of other serious and troubling concerns with respect to the hospital's governance and finances. Now, this has not helped the hospital's bottom line, as it lost over $6 million in 2016 and almost $7.5 million in 2017, and 2018 may very well be worse as a result of a reduced patient load due to the bad publicity the hospital has undergone in the last 2 years. In fact, of interest is that Moody's has downgraded its bonds from A3 to BAA3. That's a whole segment down. Not good for their bond rating. The minutes of the July 2018 board meeting noted that multiple hospital departments were asked to tighten their belts and that the board itself should have less expensive dinners at their meetings, and that the district board members should waive their board and committee meeting stipends for the next 12 months, which I believe the board did. As a registered nurse who has worked in both hospitals and private doctor offices, I believe I have the professional competency and a real-world understanding of what it takes to provide competent, quality health care in today's mix of public and private health care services. And I welcome offering my services and expertise in the healthcare industry to help deal with the financial and other difficulties the San Gregorio Memorial Hospital is undergoing. I also bring a few unusual qualifications. I am the Inland Empire's foremost advocate for medical marijuana patients and their ability to have safe, reliable, local, and affordable access to their medicine. In 2008, I convinced the city of Palm Springs to become the first city, and until 2015, the only city in the Indian Empire to allow medical marijuana collectives to operate and provide patients with their medicinal marijuana. In succeeding years, I lobbied many city councils and both the Riverside and San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors for patient access to what they are allowed to obtain under state law. In addition, I am a Democrat. I'm a Democratic activist, serving as an elected member of the Riverside County Democratic Central Committee, a delegate to the party's state convention for the last 5 years, and a member of the California Democratic Party's executive board, which devises the programs and sets the policy for the party that controls the fifth largest economy in the world. I am the only candidate for the San Gregorio Memorial Healthcare District that has been endorsed by the Riverside County Democratic Party and by the California Democratic Party. In the November 8th election, there's going to be 8 candidates who are running for 3 positions. There's 5 Republicans, 2 Democrats, and 1 declined to state. The 2 incumbents are running for re-election. The only other RN running, besides myself, is the other Democrat. My views do reflect democratic values and solutions that people have a right to quality health care, and that a single-payer health care system would be the most advantageous, especially for smaller communities like Banning and Beaumont that are having financial difficulties in maintaining these essential life-giving and affirming services. Now, I have chosen to run for the Board of Directors of the San Gregorio Memorial Health Care District because, 1, I live in Whitewater that it serves. 2, I am concerned about the quality of health care in my community. And 3, as a registered nurse and a legal nurse consultant, I am professionally qualified for this position. Let me be very clear. Marijuana has nothing to do with my running for this position. Although I may be one of the most active and, I hope, articulate advocates for marijuana law reform in the IE, those who know me recognize that I have a wide range of interest and perspectives on a cornucopia of issues from the economy to the environment to equality. As a nurse, one of those issues has always been health care. Like no one in this country should starve to death for lack of food, no one should die because of the unavailability of health care. I fully believe that competent health care is a right and should not be denied based on whether a person has the money to pay for it. That's a tall order. And although I'm not likely to have much effect on the issue of quality, affordable health care on the national level, I can on the local level. I can do this by using my professional health care knowledge, coupled with the political acumen I've acquired over the years, to help the San Gregorio Memorial Hospital, the only local hospital in my community, to provide competent, quality, and affordable health care that is second to none. Now, let me make it very clear a second time. No way will I be trying to get marijuana into our local hospital. The San Gregorio Memorial Hospital receives millions of dollars of federal money every year, from Medicare to outright grants. due to the continuance of reefer madness ideology and the power of federal police agencies, this money would be at risk. This is an intolerable and untenable position. I would never want the hospital to be in that position. That doesn't mean marijuana doesn't have a role here. It does, but not directly. With national opinion polls showing upwards of 80% of Americans supporting the use of marijuana medically, and California and eight other states legalizing marijuana both medically and for adult use, it is now a subject that dares to speak its name. It's a subject that comes up for discussion often and in a variety of ways. One of the most important ways is in the field of health, and being a member of the board of directors of the San Gorgonio Memorial Healthcare District would put me into contact with people who need to learn of those benefits. One of the most important benefits of marijuana that is seldom discussed is its use in the hospital setting. No better example can be found than in a hospital's cardiac unit where I worked as a nurse. Having problems with their hearts, patients are anxious and stressed, which is the last thing heart patients should be experiencing. Unfortunately, the treatment for anxiety and stress is often anti-anxiety, antipsychotic, and anti-insomnia medications. Much better would be for them to have a vaporizer at their bedside, so whenever they felt anxious, they could take a hit or two and calm down, relax, and sleep peacefully. Not only would the use of marijuana relieve them of the anxiety that comes from having serious heart problems without the use of prescription pharmaceuticals, it would at the same time help them feel better, as feeling better is the major side effect of marijuana use. And for nurses, let me tell you, that would be a major benefit because it is far, far easier to take care of a patient who is feeling better than a patient who is feeling worse. Now, this would also apply to patients in hospitals suffering from other things like chronic pain and nausea. With the many bills in Congress seeking to allow states to pursue marijuana legalization free of federal interference and even remove marijuana from the schedule of controlled substances, it is time that this discussion on the local level begins so that when these bills pass, the compassionate and essential use of marijuana in the hospital setting can begin as quickly as possible. Okay, now if you agree with the above and think that I might indeed be perfect fit for this position, then you can make it happen. Now, I really don't need much money. I'm not filing for an FPPC number, which means I cannot spend more than $2,000 on the campaign. Hey, I can use a few small donations, but I'm not dialing for dollars. But if you'd like to help fund me a bit, that would be great. Send me a check made out to Lanny Swerdlow, and send it to P.O. Box 918 Cabazon, Cabazon, California 92230. More importantly, though, I need your time to help get the word out about my candidacy. If you can contribute a couple hours a week or a couple hours a day or whatever, I would be sincerely appreciative. You can help no matter where you live, as one of the major outreaches would be to text message the 45,000 voters in the area about my candidacy. Text messaging is very easy. All you do is push a couple buttons on your smartphone. It's so easy that you can send 6 or 7 text messages in just 1 minute. You don't have to say anything. You just push buttons. This is truly a come-as-you-are volunteer opportunity, and you can do it in your own home, and it's one of the most important ways to secure my election. If you are in the area, there are 2 other ways you can be present. One is distributing flyers and cards. This consists of going to stores and public places, mainly in the cities of Banning and Beaumont, and posting signs and handing out cards about my candidacy. The other, which can be a lot of fun in a certain way, is sign waving. This consists of standing at busy intersections in Banning and Beaumont with signs about my candidacy, waving signs while horns are honking. Let me tell you, it's a hoot. This is about as basic a grassroots local political action as you can experience. Marijuana consumers need to be involved in their communities if we are going to truly and irrevocably secure our rights to safe, reliable, local, and affordable access to marijuana. This is one way you can effectively achieve this goal on the local level. Please consider helping me by sending an email to LannyRN@mail.com. That's LannyRN at mail, mail.com. Or give me a call, 760-799-2055. 760-799-2055. Thank you very much. I would love to serve on that board. Okay, and now we're going to get to the real reason you called in, not to hear me talk about my candidacy, though I hope you found that of interest, but to talk with our guest, Michael Harris. Michael is a retired iron worker. He's also an RN. He's a member of the Human Solution that provides court support for people charged with a variety of marijuana criminal actions. Speaking of court support, he was one of the people that attended my court hearings when Paul Chabot, the evil Paul Chabot, accused me falsely of pushing him at a meeting that I attended and then filed battery charges against me. This was really stressful for me because the lawyer I had dropped out about a year before this went to court, and I had to defend myself against this guy, Paul Chabot, who hired a very competent attorney. People like Michael came down there, and their support really was so important to me. I do want to specifically thank Letitia Pepper, because without her help, she's an attorney, without her background helping with filing papers and doing all the kind, you know, going to court is a real, this is not an average person cannot do this. It's just incredibly. And thanks to her backup and support, I was able to file all the papers properly and all the motions and all that kind of stuff, and was successful in the jury finding me not guilty. Several years later, I sued Paul Chabot for false arrest and won and got $10,000 from him. But that's neither here nor there, because what we have here with us right now is Mike Harris, who is going to tell us all about what's going on in Upland in regards to a de facto personal marijuana cultivation ban. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Lanny. I'd like to say, first off, I think we all should stand behind Paul Chabot and push.
Well, you know, he's no longer living here. Last year, he announced that he was moving to Texas. I think it was in the spring of the year. Yeah, he announced, and I put out an email about that saying, hey, great news, Paul Chabot is moving. I said, great, there's good news and there's bad news. And the good news was that Paul Chabot was going to move to Texas. The bad news was that it wasn't until 6 months later in November that he was going to move. But that's where he is now in the state of Texas, and no doubt he is voting for Ted Cruz, I am sure, and not Michael anyway.
Yeah, he was caught on a show on NPR trying to arrange an all-conservative group buying homes within an area that he was going to do the mortgages on, and it was going to be ran through that nonprofit foundation that he has, the Freedom whatever. So they were kind of asking some pretty hard questions on how he can do that.
Well, listen, he was a professional drug warrior. He had about 7 or 8 different of these nonprofit foundations, all suckling at the tit of the federal government for money. And that's when I went to the meeting that he was doing, this organized meeting for this Community Free Drug Association thing that the Office of National Drug Control Policy has, and he was trying to get money from them to set up this thing, and that's where he claimed I pushed him and so he can get the cops to come down and get me out of the meeting. Anyway, but let's talk about the city of Upland and the de facto ban. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that Proposition 64 overturns the ban that many of these cities had enacted because the medical marijuana Regulation and Safety Act allowed them to ban indoor cultivation. Prop 64 overturned that ban, and so a number of cities retaliated by passing regulations that are anything but reasonable. Could you tell us a bit about the city of Upland and what it did?
Well, first off, it's the city of Fontana.
Fontana.
We're just a little bit east of Upland.
Right.
Well, prior to the vote on 64, the city preemptively established an ordinance basically reiterating they're banning everything. Indoor grows that are medical, outdoor grows, any kind of commercial activity, They were pretty extensive on the gamut of what the things they were not going to allow through code enforcement. And that's kind of like the trick word these days, code enforcement. And after the election in January of 2017, they passed a permit process. It had already gone through the planning the year prior, the planning department, and I spoke against it. I was the only one that had spoke against it. And the following year in January, they passed an ordinance, you know, that they were going to require these anybody that was going to want to grow personal home cultivation, not medical, but personal. That's how they kind of define it, or that's how they do define it. They still will not allow medical. But because that they're not allowed to ban it and the state has codified it now within their constitution, they have to have an ordinance that reasonably regulated it. So they passed this, basically a very onerous permit process that they want you to pay, I think, $411 for the filing fee of it. That's part of that, or majority of it, they claim is just to investigate you for it. And they want you to pay for a fingerprinting on your own expense, and also a Department of Justice criminal background check on your own expense, on top of what they claim that they're going to be investigating you for. The refiling fee, I guess, annually is around $200-something if you want to continue it, renew it the following year. They're asking for home inspections by anybody and that they seem to feel that is adequate, including law enforcement coming into your house for what they are describing as a building permit. The caveat to that is you're not allowed to build anything. You're not allowed to modify anything within your home. You have to have it within a room that's not used for anything else. Can't be inhabited. You can't cook food in it. It has to be behind a locked door. Nobody's can be sleeping in it. It can be only used for that purpose. They require, or they say that anybody that has had a prior cannabis conviction, manufacturing, possession, sales within the last 5 years is excluded from getting a permit. And they say they can inspect you at any time. They leave that open. And that if they find that you're in noncompliance, you have to go through their code enforcement arbitration, which basically is the city manager. And, you know, all of this comes under code enforcement, which I know you're very familiar with, having been involved in the Riverside Health and Wellness decision. You know, a lot of this is the same laws and regulations that that fell under that decision. So, you know, it's very, I didn't like it. I spoke out about it at the planning commission, and then I think it might have even been you that had mentioned that the DPA was going to basically look for cities that
DPA had contacted me to see if I knew of anybody in the city of Fontana who could be a plaintiff.
That was in addition to me.
But anyway,
I'd heard that they were looking for somebody that, you know, really didn't like what was going on. So I sent them a copy of the ordinance, and, you know, I told them that my views on it, and I was willing to stand up on behalf of, you know, myself, and if they could help, you know, I would willingly accept it. And after a time, they had decided that they were going to pick up my banner, I suppose you would say, and in April of 2017, I filed with the help of the Drug Policy Alliance, American Civil Liberties, and the legal term of O'Melveny and Myers, the legal team.
Well, that's quite a triumphant of groups there supporting your case. I wish the Riverside Collective that I was part of had that kind of a legal acumen behind it. Perhaps the outcome might have been different if we had. So what is their argument that the city of Fontana's regulations are suspect?
Well, aside from basically disenfranchising the will of voters, they argue that they basically default improperly onto the supremacy clause that it's a Schedule One substance, which is basically to their detriment in arguing it, because what they're asking for basically makes them complicit in their our argument. They say that it's the usual things, that it attracts crime, it's a public nuisance, it's a health and safety nuisance, it has to be highly regulated, and it wasn't. But they don't really give the reasons they give for it are all refuted by two of my experts that were willing to testify and did include a declaration within the writ. They make arguments that it's mold, mildew, water damage, fire hazard, and all of these arguments are basically specious claims that the high intensity drug trafficking group that's comes out of the White House puts out. But my experts in the field says, that six plants or less doesn't come under any of this stuff. They even made the claim that volatile gases shouldn't be used within the house, and cited carbon dioxide, which, as most people know, is like the stuff that makes Coca-Cola fizz. It's not combustible. It's not flammable. They even mentioned, I think, oxygen, which, if you ever had chemistry, that oxygen isn't flammable either. It potentiates fire, but that's neither here nor there. Later on, they went along to try to, clarify their reason for not allowing carbon dioxide, because of they claim that it's required in growing. They didn't say whether or not growers used it on their own or the reasons they do. They just said that it was a requirement that for indoor grows, carbon dioxide has to be used. And if there's a fire, a compressed cylinder will explode. Now, I have to, argue that if you have a fire, that is the thing that you got to worry about. You're not a compressed cylinder. So the fire is already a problem. They point out that the electricity use for a home grow of six or less plants isn't going to take much more than what a microwave pulls. And, I understand, I'm a homeowner that's lived in my own house for over 30 years, that, if you plug too many things into the sockets, you're going to trip a breaker. And I have a little bit of understanding beyond that, that's a 15-amp circuit, and it's not hard to add up the amps to know which, if you're going to weather overload or not. And with, six plants, basically you're only allowed maybe one light if you're running the HIDs, and and you could probably run several lights if it's an LEDs now, because they pull a lot less electricity. They make a lot of claims about, attracting crime, or it's a safety issue. So all of these have been disputed by the rebuttals, and it's kind of ridiculous, but it is what it is.
Well, it would seem that the fact is the voters of California said that you should be able to do this, and for them to come up with all these reasons why You shouldn't be able to do that. Flies in the face with the voters of California and the city of Fontana. I think, didn't the city of Fontana approve 64?
Yes. Well, the voters did, not the,
yeah,
the people,
I mean,
on the city council. The to a person, that's Democrats included, they're all opposed to it. And you know, the shame of it is they created the ordinance, and they even publicly said it was to deter people from doing it. And
right,
we cite legal precedents in governing that if you're going to do something for the public, it should be for them and not to suppress, you know, the rights of the citizens within it. And, you know, that they're asking for things that basically fly against law. You know, that they're asking me to basically, you know, incriminate myself by having to, you know, file for a permit in the first place, because they've already said that, you know, that they're against this thing, and there's nothing that would keep them from turning over any of my public information to the federal government afterwards. You know,
I'm
so that
sure
violates my Fifth Amendment rights. They want to come into the House, and they've already said that, you know, they're going to be looking for other violations within my property. So, you know, their agenda is to make sure that whatever they can find, they're going to cite me for. And this city has a very a curious behavior when it comes to code enforcement, that the state legislatures had to correct. It originated in the city. But they were charging people for code violations for too many leaves, and giving them a bill for $30,000, which was the cost that they determined through a third party to prosecute themselves. And that was, you might have followed it or not, but it was AB, the Senate or Assembly Bill 2495 that last month was approved by the legislature of California to outlaw this practice that originated in my city. This is who they are and what they do, and how predatory they are in code enforcement. You know, so this is the purview that we have to work on. NPR, All Things Considered, ran a program on it a week and a half ago. You know, so, you know, this thing is well documented on the behavior I'm doing.
To the best of your knowledge, has anybody in the city of Fontana applied for and received a permit to grow indoors?
Well, several months ago, Brooke Staggs, she's a reporter for the Orange County Register, Press Enterprise, and writes for, I guess it's a blog called the Californian. And she's done several articles on my case, and she had interviewed the people down at City Hall, and a year after the ordinance was passed to allow permits, not a single person has applied, and there's 44,000 residences in the city of Fontana with a population of 217,000 people. And that means not a single person has applied for it. They are still arresting people for cultivating them. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a real shame about that. But then they can declare any kind of grow illegal that doesn't have a permit.
Of course. Well, listen, there's going to be the court case is coming up, and I want to talk a little bit about that. We got to take a little break for a couple of announcements, so can you hang tight just for a few minutes, Mike, and we'll get right back to you, and we'll talk about the court case and how people can attend and what to expect to happen, all right?
All right.
Okay, well, hey, folks, got a couple little things here I need to talk about. One of the things I love to talk about, of course, is Higher Power 420. That's right, Higher Power 420. What is it? Well, it's a gorgeous and mind-boggling limited edition print depicting everyone's favorite deities in a joyous 420 celebration. Conceived and designed by moi, Lanny Swerdlow, and artistically rendered by Shane Master Creation Hibbets, Higher Power 420 is an engaging, thought-provoking, and satiric look at the foibles of religion and the role marijuana can play in today's polarized and estranged world. You know, for thousands of years, marijuana has aided the social cohesion of emerging societies by reducing stress and anxiety. Calms people down, makes it easier for them to exist harmoniously with each other by creating a mental state of altruism, understanding, and compassion. This remains a common communal token experience today, as many cannabis consumers describe achieving a similar mental state when they imbibe. With all the violent religious strife going on in the Middle East, it is not so unreasonable to conclude that the Middle East was a lot calmer and more tolerant when smoking hash was part of the many social interactions and rituals. Cannabis brings people together, broadens their perspective, and helps them to take pleasure in the company of other peoples they normally would find it difficult to be with. That's the core of Higher Power 420, a beautiful art print depicting the gathering together of the iconic religious figures of today's enjoying each other's companies. Higher Power 420 depicts everyone's favorite deity in a joyous 420 celebration as they escape from their adherents' incessant squabbles as they relax and enjoy each other's company while sharing their common, albeit supernatural, humanity. Only a cannabis could allow them to kick back with each other as well as help them overlook and forget about their inherent competing claims and fiesta dominance. In Higher Power 420, they share this. Higher Power 420 is a limited edition iconograph. Each 16 by 20 inch art print is signed and numbered by the artist and comes with a certificate of authenticity. Be the first to have one adorn the walls of your home or office. Sure to be a conversation starter in any situation. Also makes the perfect gift for your sophisticated cannabis connoisseur friends. Cost is only $24.20, and that includes all shipping and handling charges. To see this thought-provoking and iconoclastic print and to order your personal copy of a signed and numbered limited edition print of Higher Power 420, go to www.higherpower420.com. That's 420, higherpower420.com. Okay, you'll love it. Just if you don't want to order it, go there, higherpower420.com. Take a look at it. It'll make your day. Let me show you. All right, one other thing I want to mention, of course, is if you like the information you get here on Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, you'll love my newsletter, my free email newsletter. To get to my newsletter, just go to marijuananews.com. That's one word, marijuananews.com. And on the navigation bar at the top of the page, click on newsletter, and up comes the information where you can sign for it, sign up for it, and you'll start receiving in your inbox my email newsletter. Now, I only send it out 2 to 3 times a month, so you won't be inundated because I know your email inbox probably is full to overflowing. So it won't be that much more fuller if you get my I don't start sending you things every time I want you to read something. It only comes out 2 or 3 times a month. It'll also give you information about our monthly meetings here in Moreno Valley, Joshua Tree, and Palm Springs. So go to marijuananews.org, click on newsletter. And by the way, if you start getting a newsletter and you decide you don't like it, you don't want it, just scroll down to the bottom. There is an unsubscribe button, so you'll stop receiving the newsletter. But I bet you once you start getting it, you'll want to keep receiving it. Okay, and please let all your friends know about our radio show, Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. Send them an email. Tell them to listen in to Mike and his talk about what's happening in the city of Fontana and their personal cultivation, de facto cultivation ban. So I'm going to bring Mike back in the studio. Mike, okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going to happen now. So the ACLU and DPA and all the law firm have all filed lawsuit against the city of Fontana. So what's going to happen?
Okay, well, we filed a writ of mandamus, and the hearing is October 5th in the San Bernardino Superior Court. If folks want to come, the address is 247 West 3rd Street. That's in the city of San Bernardino, and it's at Department S-26 at 8:30 in the morning, October 5th. That's on a Friday. I would ask if anybody comes, be respectful, and there's no talking while you're in the courtroom. Please address, dress appropriately, business attire minimum. If you want to dress like you're at church, that's fine. But, you know, I just remind people it's not a town hall. It's not a place where people can interject or put their own personal feelings in. It's not about them. This is a, it's a very dignified and public place, but it's not a public forum. It's a court of law.
Right.
So, you know,
so what,
if you're not familiar with court procedure, you know, I'd ask that, you know, just come in and remain silent.
Right. So what's going to happen? What kind of presentations are going to be made at this particular hearing?
That's a good question, because we've been arguing and debating over discovery and what we're allowed to present. Initially, the plaintiffs, the city of Fontana, were able to suppress any discovery that we wanted to submit, other than what was just in the official record. We wanted to able to have the city council people testify on the statements that they made. We wanted the police department, people within the police department, to testify on why they made these statements, as well as others. We wanted to be able to present two witnesses, which we had lined up, which was Mr. Conrad and Mr. Morrill. One is a cultivation expert and has testified in, I guess, very, very many, Chris Conrad, in a whole bunch of cases, and also Mr. Morrill, who is a career LAPD policeman that also testifies in court hearings now. And both of those people were denied to be able to be in discovery, but we eventually got their written testimony within the writ, and that was accepted. And the rebuttal from the city was they didn't want it, but we rebutted again. So as far as how the procedures are going, I do not know. I've never been to a writ hearing, so I'm not sure of the procedure. It's in a courtroom that is reserved for complex litigation. And if you're familiar with the woman that was she was a landlord that the city and some of the local newspapers had branded her a godmother of pot, I think, or a kingpin. Anyway, she's one of the a woman that was renting out the old telephone, Pacific telephone building that was empty, and using that, and they had like 24,000 plants, but there were no arrests made because she was the landlord. Anyway, she's had many of her cases within this courtroom, as well as they decide, I guess, some of the initiatives that San Bernardino residents have passed, and this court has ruled on them. So as far as that goes, you know, I'm not really sure as far as the procedure, but both sides will be arguing, you know, why they think this permit is either, you know, necessary on the city side, or whether it's invalid on my side.
Now, will the judge actually be issuing a decision on whether these regulations are reasonable or not? Is that the final outcome, or is it going to be something else?
Yes, but I don't know if it'll be that day. You know, sometimes if they decide to make a ruling within a certain amount of time, I don't know if that'll be on that day, or if he will deliberate about it.
Oh, I'm sure he will deliberate. Not likely that they'll make a decision on that. But it really doesn't matter. I would imagine whichever side loses is going to appeal this to a higher court.
And, yes, the city has said that, and they made the statement, no matter what, they're coming into my house to inspect if I have plants and pulled permit. And our side is pretty much adamant that, you know, we're going to fight this, and we intend to appeal if we lose. So it's somewhat of a stalemate.
Is it all right to ask you if you are growing? or is that not – is that something that – that you can't publicly talk about?
Yeah, well, I wish I was, but I was asked not to.
Not to grow.
And I've respected their wishes, and I don't really have any problem. There's plenty of dispensaries in the area, and you know, there's plenty of apps on the internet telling you where you can find it. So I don't have any problem with that. Now, I did ask if they wanted me to apply for a permit, and they said no. We're going to file this on behalf of you being a citizen of the city and a taxpayer. And so that was their standing on it, and they felt that they had a good legal footing on it. Unfortunately, in the first hearing, the judge had made a comment that he didn't feel that I had standing because I hadn't filed a permit. But, you know, nobody has. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what they think about that or how they're going to, you know, discuss that.
Okay, that will be interesting. You kind of indicated that the city's going to send some police over to our code enforcement officer to see if you are growing or not?
Well, I've had a few knock and talks, you know,
really?
But it wasn't anything to do with cannabis. They were asking vague questions about a neighbor, and then I asked them, you know, what neighbor, and they says, well, you know, the bad one. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, it came pretty clear to me they weren't there to talk about a neighbor. They just wanted to see what I was up to. And then there was about 6 months ago, I believe, you know, after we had filed this, I had three police cars parked in front of my house for about, I don't know, 45 minutes. And they just kept looking at the house, and they were writing things down. So I don't know if they were what they were doing, but they
have they actually
the
come into your house at all?
At my house. No,
have they actually come into your house?
No. And you know, they don't. Nobody's had a warrant, and I don't believe there's any reason that they would have to have a warrant. But you know, I'm kind of expecting a little bit of blowback from it, but you know, nothing right now.
Well, let's hope that there isn't any blowback from it. Let's hope that that this eventually winds up in losing and them having to get rid. Better yet, maybe we'll get some better people elected to the city council in Fontana who are a little more understanding with it. You know,
yeah,
there's
election coming up. Yeah.
Has there been any discussion on this ordinance in the election about marijuana and this kind of stuff?
No, none of the people really touch it. The politicians, pretty much on one side, if they're in favor of it, keep it to themselves, and the ones that don't like to cite it, you know, as a problem along with Prop 47 and 109 as crime has increased and. Basically, they just sell fear. You know, none of it's true, but it still resonates with a certain part of the electorate.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that even though you're not growing, you have no trouble obtaining marijuana. Is there marijuana dispensaries? Granted, they're illegal. Are they operating in Fontana?
I don't know. I've never been to one in Fontana, to be truthful.
Oh.
But... I think there isn't any in the city proper, but I think they've had a few of them that are in the county area that is considered Fontana, but it's still the county, it's not city.
Okay.
And but even those still are eventually raided by the sheriff. And I guess recently there's some in the nearby cities, like in Eastville, not Arupa Valley, they had some places that our friend Matt Pappas was their legal counsel, and it was a church, and they were operating for a long time until I guess up until 2 weeks ago they had been raided. So, yeah, the raids still happen.
The raids still happen, and people are still getting busted. Well, listen. Mike, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the air. I'm going to be down at that hearing, and looking very much forward to seeing what goes on there. By the way, I would like to let everyone know that Mike will be at the Marijuana Prohibition meeting on Wednesday, October 5th at our Moreno Valley location. Everyone is welcome to attend. The meeting starts
October 3rd.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much. October 3rd. Thank you for correcting me. Yes, October 3rd. Wednesday, October 3rd at 7:30 p.m., and it takes place at the Greenview Medical Clinic, and the address is 22275 Alessandro Boulevard in Moreno Valley, 92553, and everyone is welcome to attend. There is no charge for coming to a meeting. We'd love to see you there. Well, thank you, Mike. Is there any last words you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, just for, you know, everybody that's out there that listens to this, you know, keep in mind that, you know, we're a nation of laws, but we don't necessarily have the privilege of those laws unless we fight for them. And, you know, and when you don't step up and fight for things is when you lose them.
That is the truth. You know, we've got these new legalization laws. We've had medical marijuana laws in the books for over 20 years now. But if you don't fight for them tooth and nail, you ain't going to get them, because the forces allied against us, mainly police agencies and so on, are really powerful forces. So you got to stand and fight. And Mike has been a fighter for a long time. He's come to so many of the actions and events and things that we've had and taken place here in the Inland Empire. Thanks to people like Mike, we are making progress. So I look forward to seeing you on the 3rd at the meeting, and I look forward to seeing you on the 5th at the court hearing, Mike. And thank you so much for taking your time to join us today on Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense.
All right. Thank you, Lenny, and be well.
Okay, you too. All right, folks. Well, listen, we're going to wrap the show up now. I want to thank Mike for doing this, and, of course, I want to thank you for listening in. Please let your friends know all about our show. And we're going to kind of close with a little song here, a song from Lynette Shaw. Lynette, you know, by the way, operated the very first legal medical marijuana dispensary up in Fairfax, California. She got closed down by the feds a number of years ago. She fought back, and thanks to that ruling that thing that was passed in Congress saying that DOJ couldn't spend any money enforcing federal law against medical marijuana providers in the state of California, she's been able to reopen her dispensary now in Fairfax. But she's also a singer, a blues singer, and here's one of her songs that I really like. It's called Lead the Way.
Lead the way, we want to seek solutions. time is on our side. We are warm, they are cold, their way is gonna die. Lead the way, start the weed revolution. There are many who will stand up for our rights. Lead the way, we want to seek solutions. This is just the start of our long fight. The big mistake the bad guys make up in their ivory tower. They left an underestimate. Hey, people power, we will unite and come around to take back our lost rights. Freedom from the police state, so we can sleep at night. Lead the way, start the weed revolution. There are many who will stand up for our rights. Lead the way, we want to seek solutions. Yeah, this is just the start of our long fight.
Lynette Shaw and in Lead the Way. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. Hey, don't forget, if you're in the area on Wednesday, October 3rd, please drop by our meeting at 7:30 p.m. in Moreno Valley. And like I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to get onto my free email newsletter, please subscribe at go to marijuananews.org and at the navigation bar, click on newsletter. Until the next show, hey, thank you for joining us. Kick back, relax, keep on smoking, keep on eating, and whatever it is. Because, hey, when this day's is time and stress, we certainly need all the cannabis we can consume.